welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Tony Pialis. Tony is the co-founder and CEO of AlphaWave, a global leader in the high-speed connectivity IP-enabling industries such as AI, autonomous vehicles, 5G, hyperscale, data centers, and more. Welcome back to our podcast, Tony.
Hey, great to be here, Daniel. I always enjoy spending time talking to you and your listeners.
Ah, thank you. So, you know, what I'd like to talk about today is, you know, what I previously mentioned, all the different topics that, your company covers. I guess we'll call this episode, What is Keeping Semiconductor Professionals Up at Night? So first, let's talk about the metaverse. Can you tell us why the internet today can't handle the metaverse and what needs to be done to realize this virtual world?
Absolutely. Look, most of the press that you read is always about processors, right? Whether it's we need more AI, we need more CPU processing power in order to bring about the metaverse. You know, what is rarely published but is typically one of the key limiters is, hey, even if we were to double, triple, add 10x more compute power, 100x more compute power to our data centers, question is how are we going to get all the data from the edge, right, from the user, all the way into those processors? And so it's connectivity. And so connectivity is the key bottleneck. And so what's going to be needed in order to enable the metaverse? Well, it's not just the compute, but it's increasing the amount of bandwidth into and out of our data centers by orders of magnitude, okay? Not just 2x, not just 4x, but, you know, 10x, 100x. And just to make it even more challenging, we got to do that without adding significant more power consumption to the data centers, to the servers, to the semiconductors. You just can't dissipate that much additional heat in order to deploy all of the required bandwidth. So it's a steep challenge, but you know what? It's one that we as an industry have faced throughout our history, right? Every time someone has told us we couldn't do anything, you know, we couldn't advance further, we've continued to do it. And certainly here at AlphaWave, we're committed to solving that challenge and to helping enable deploy the metaverse.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the semiconductor shortage has been kind of a good thing in one sense, is everybody is very aware of semiconductors now, and, you know, everybody's talking about it, and, you know, people are better understanding, you know, what we do for a living. But what they don't understand is all the data that they are, you know, generating from all these devices they have now, you know, need to get up in the cloud. And, you know, you're right, connectivity is number one. And but I think, you know, I think we're making steps in the right direction, but we definitely have a ways to go.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. I think one of the key outcomes of the semiconductor shortage is greater global awareness in terms of how important semiconductors are, right? The minute you go to buy a car and you have the money to purchase it, and you're being told you have to wait more than a year to receive delivery, and it's not because of you know, the actual manufacturer of the car, but it's because of the lack of semiconductors, that is a sobering experience. And I, you know, I personally am doing what I can, and AlphaWave is doing what we can to help increase the awareness with our governments. You know, I'm proud to be participating with a couple U.S. Entities in regards to the CHIPS for America Act to try to help drive local onshore manufacturing to help firm up our supply chain. Likewise, I'm working with Canadian and UK governments as well. Again, all about trying to create a more robust supply chain on our shores, within our controls, and less susceptible to global politics.
Oh, I agree completely. So let's talk about autonomous vehicles a little bit more. Why is connectivity holding back autonomous vehicles? You know, what are the roadblocks to building an interconnected driving network and reaching full autonomy? I mean, we're all waiting patiently for this, but
you know, we're not there yet?
Great question. Look, the amazing thing with autonomous vehicles is we've taken data centers out of a big static facility, and we now are implanting two of them, one at the front of the car, one at the back of the car, with tons of data sensors interconnecting them, and with a major connectivity pipeline connecting the front to the back, right? And so many think that autonomous vehicles will have all of the compute available in the cloud, but that's clearly not what's safe, and that's not how they're built, right? All of the compute, all the processing needed to manage whether it's the cameras, right, or whether it's managing the LiDAR, all that needs to be within the car, so that if the car loses GSM connectivity or wireless connectivity, you're still safe driving it. So you need a massive amount of compute, you need massive amount of data connectivity to get the data to and from the sensors and from the front to the back of the car. Now, automotive adds yet another challenge, which is you need to meet the automotive grade requirements. Okay, so devices that are built for data centers have a certain amount of quality and redundancy requirements. The minute you put it into a car, right, on a moving device, which could, you know, also be viewed as a weapon if the car goes out of control, that those standards, those requirements just increase significantly. So the technology, the connectivity that goes into cars is an even higher barrier. And so what's holding us back is it's really about working closely with the automotive manufacturers to build the next generation of devices that A, meets their bandwidth needs, and B, meets their quality and safety needs. And this is happening. And look, you have leaders like Tesla that have taken control of their own semiconductor supply chain and are now working closely with semiconductor companies like Alphawave to help build up a robust supply chain, okay? You know, the likes of Ford, the likes of General Motors, you know, the European automotive manufacturers, they are moving in this direction. And a big driver has been the semiconductor shortage.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the first automotive company on SemiWiki, because I can see all the demands and such, was Tesla a few years back. And you know, I went and said, well, okay, why is Tesla reading about, you know, IP and such? And then I looked at him at LinkedIn, and I saw some friends of mine from, you know, AMD and different companies work for Tesla now. It was amazing. And just recently, you know, as what you said, is all the major companies, car companies, are now on SemiWiki. I mean, every one of them. And it's just incredible. So I think we're going to see, you know, a huge amount of design starts based on, you know, the chip shortage, you know, or result of the chip shortage.
Yeah, Daniel, it's interesting. I think I've been in this industry quite a while. You think back to when we started our careers, virtually every company had its own semiconductor design, even its own manufacturing. Then we went through a tremendous amount of consolidation, right? But I think the semiconductor shortage has now, taught some of the barriers of this consolidation, right? You now are in a queue to get your semiconductors, and it's spurring some disaggregation in terms of companies rolling up their sleeves, getting back to design, and even sponsoring new onshore manufacturing.
Right. Yeah, you know, when I started in the early 80s, I actually worked for a computer company who had their own fab. And so I worked in the fab, but they made all their own chips. And it really has come full circle, because, you know, from the systems companies making their chips, then we went to IDMs, you know, Motorola and Intel came out and started doing, you know, general purpose chips, and, you know, made having your own fab not reasonable. And then the fabless guys kind of, you know, kicked in, and but now the system guys are coming back. And, you know, it was already started, you know, Apple started it and some other companies, but the shortage definitely, you know, gave people a reason. I think, you know, executives could write some pretty big checks, you know, saying, hey, we need to do this stuff ourselves because of this shortage. We've lost billions of dollars, you know, in revenue because we can't ship products. So it's a full circle thing, you know, like you mentioned. But
agreed. And I think It's now being spurred on by just everything that we're seeing in the world, right? The uncertainty, and we need to have greater control of our supply chain.
Yeah, at the conference yesterday, the Design Con.
Yeah.
There was a panel about. This panel said bespoke silicon. So I actually had to look up bespoke. But, you know, what they're talking about is the trend towards custom silicon, you know, going back, or what I call domain specific silicon, which is, you know, people like the hyperscalers doing chips themselves. And, you know, I noticed a year ago, the Airbnb cape was on SemiWiki. It's like, you know, why would a, you know, house renting service, beyond SemiWiki, but you know they're probably doing their own server silicon, and it's called bespoke silicon now. I guess I don't know if that'll catch on, but I'm sure you're seeing that. I mean, you have the IP that needs to be inside these this custom silicon. So
yeah, look, not only do we have the IP, but with some recent acquisitions that we've completed, we now also have the ability to design custom silicon for our customers, as you mentioned. And look, when you fast forward a couple years, right, in order to try to maintain the drive for higher integration, obviously chiplets is a path that virtually everyone in the data center space has moved towards. Right, you have the likes of Intel, the likes of NVIDIA, the likes of Apple, the likes of AMD that have all gone to chiplets, and the rest of the industry is trying to figure out how to do it. And so to enable this custom silicon, I think it's more than just being able to design one piece of custom silicon, but it's really becoming a systems play where you need to design some of your own custom silicon. You need to be able to pull in some third-party chiplets. And really, the integration is no longer in the motherboard, but it's moving to happen within the package, right? And now there's so many new, really exciting packaging technologies, whether it's silicon interposer, metallized interposers, or what's being called silicon bridges, to connect up all of this various type of silicon. It's really changing how compute and how semiconductors and technology is being built and deployed.
Yeah, there was another talk on at the conference about that, about chiplets, and you know, it's the interconnectivity is very difficult, and simulating is very difficult. But you know, I'm sure you're seeing this on the inside, but what is the real reason people are doing chiplets? Is it because yield? Is it a shortcut? You know, personally, I think chiplets are cheating. You know, I'm old school. We used to do big chips, right? But why are your customers doing chiplets? You know, what's the real reason?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Look, I used to be in your camp, right? I used to say he who integrates wins, right? Many companies have won throughout the years because they took 2 to 3 discrete chips and then integrated. Yeah, so what's driving it? And look, it took a lot of data to convince me, but I'm convinced at this point. And now I am working here at AlphaWave to make it happen. But the drivers, yeah, clearly number one is yield, right? You know, no one wants to spend $500 million plus on a chip and only have it yield 15 to 25%. Okay. Like, that massive, massive waste of money. So you have to make it smaller in order to have, more successful commercial product. Secondly, design times are enormous for these full reticle or near full reticle. And so if you want to have quick time to market, if you need to be able to adapt and or build some customized silicon for your customers, right? It's very well known. Intel has its standard products, but it also customizes for the hyperscalers. And the big guys need that customization. How do you do that quickly? How do you do it efficiently, both cost efficiently, as well as reduce risk, avoid respins. So chiplets, I think, is an approach to trying to hierarchically dissect the chip building phase, move some of the capabilities off onto other pieces of silicon that logically makes sense to partition. And so now you're able to A, choose your process that's optimized for the functionality, right? Processors obviously benefit from the latest and greatest nodes. I/O and connectivity maybe can sit on the previous generation node. And then finally, you can now mix and match and deliver those customized products, not by taping out new silicon, by mixing and matching chiplets. The same way, you know, companies used to be able to build different motherboards by changing chipsets. You can now do it, but you do it within the package. And so I think given the complexity, right, because we're no longer integrating millions of transistors, we're integrating tens of billions. At some point, you need to break the problem down into smaller pieces and then integrate them. And now that integration's moved to within these packages.
Yeah, I agree. It enables design starts, right? You know, a lot of people are going to be able to do quicker design starts and reuse IP and, you know, also combine multiple process technologies in the same chip, right? Because, you know, leading edge silicon is harder to get. You know, you can do these chiplets in trailing edge or mature nodes just as easy, right? So it's good for design starts. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, here's a prime example. One of our chiplet customers, their processor is fine. It's great. It's meeting the market's needs. But the industry just went from PCI Express Gen 4 to Gen 5. So in a monolithic world, they'd have to respin that chip, which would cost, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. In a chiplet-based world, you swap out one chiplet with another, costs orders of magnitude less, gets your new product out in, you know, in less than 2 quarters compared to, you know, on the order of 2 years. So it makes a lot of sense for a lot of complex products.
Right. So 5G is something that, you know, that's a big market for you folks. Tell us just, you know, from the trenches, what are the challenges preventing the global 5G rollout?
Well, I think the world, right, had anticipated, you know, 5G would just open up the next wave of technology as it spanned from video to AI to virtual reality, metaverse. Clearly, those killer apps that, you know, were anticipated that would leverage 5G have not emerged yet. I think some more technical creativity, and perhaps it's on the software side, to leverage the full bandwidth could help drive that exponential data growth that techies like us have anticipated. Who knows, maybe we'll need to wait for the next generation for those killer apps to get deployed. Maybe the metaverse will be such a killer app to drive that amazing deployment of bandwidth. But look, for us on the connectivity silicon side, 5G and all of the extra antennas needed for it has really pushed the amount of bandwidth needed to get data out of the airwaves and into the data centers. And so, you know, we're working to continue to deliver the, you know, the best connectivity technology at the lowest power profile. So more and more of these base station deployments and mini base station deployments continue to happen so the world can get connected up to the internet.
Yeah, you know, last year, December, you know, I'm a pilot and a semiconductor professional, and I was a bit shocked to get an airworthiness directive from the FAA as a result of the 5G rollout. The 5G base stations were interfering with the altimeters of the airplane. So they were warning, you know, the pilots saying, hey, listen, you know, don't trust your altimeter in these specific areas where the 5G was rolling out. And, you know, in my mind, you know, as a semiconductor guy, it's like, how could we, you know, let this happen? You know, it's just, we've been working on this for so long. And here, you know, we could actually be crashing, you know, commercial airlines due to this. So it's a complicated thing. But, you know, I actually worked with one of our vendors, Ansys, digging deep in this. And, you know, it turns out it just wasn't simulated as good as it should have been, or it wasn't simulated properly. But we have to just remember that, you know, 5G is going to touch so many things. And, you know, we really need to be careful about this. But it was just a little bit of a shock.
Yeah, look, the reality is, you know, where we live in North America here, internet access is readily available. But, as you go to more rural areas and more impoverished nations, there's still quite a bit of dark nations. And, wireless technology, low orbiting satellites are, the two prime approaches to connect, these parts of the world. And you're right, with all of this data flowing through our airwaves, it can create havoc. And so, yes, we have a social responsibility. And look, I'm an IO designer, so part of that responsibility falls on me to put in the effort and the focus to reduce these risks to society. Because, in design, it's always the stuff you don't check that, that creates problems. That's just part of design. So we absolutely need to be more thoughtful.
Yeah. Well, it's making us stronger, right? So we're figuring that out. And there were no big tragedies, but it's just something we have to plan for.
Yeah. Design is all about iteration, right? Taking the feedback and making it better.
Yeah. And, nowadays we can simulate, in a 3D world, you can simulate, the whole thing. So we have the tools. We just need to, implement them properly. So one final question, and this is kind of a big question, but let's talk about the critical yet overlooked technology that enables, this digital world we have. We have Web 3.0, we have AI, we have 5G, as we talked about, autonomous vehicles, data centers, hybrid and edge cloud environments, and all sorts of things, and as an interconnectivity, company, you see it all. So, what's going on here?
It's just the vast amount of data is driving tremendous amount of growth. I'll give an example. Currently we have about 75 zettabytes of data that's being stored on Earth. By 2025, it's expected to grow to greater than 150 zettabytes, so more than doubling, okay? And so not only are we generating all this data with autonomous driving vehicles and cameras everywhere and even more streaming and media sharing and the metaverse, I'm sure will drive it even more. So we now need to enable the bandwidth and the capacity and the data highways to allow this data to get moved, processed, studied, analyzed, and stored. And we got to do this in a in an acceptable format from a social responsibility perspective. So making sure it's green and power efficient. And so look, that need, that demand is driving a tremendous amount of new technologies. Here at AlphaWave, we're doing our part to drive these new technologies, and part of that is taking what has traditionally been transmitted over copper and moving it to low power optical format, right? So our job doesn't end at the electrical signal, but it ends when the data gets to the endpoint. Dan, I'm sure you saw at DesignCon, there was a lot of talk about optical connectivity. Right. And look, we're doing our part on that front because optics is going to be the path by which we can enable this bandwidth growth while still reducing power consumption at the same time. And so I think if you keep a close eye on this, you'll see a lot of really interesting technologies get deployed. I think you'll see us deploying a lot of really interesting technologies to enable and drive forward all of these sectors while doing it in a socially responsible manner, which means keeping power consumption smaller and smaller.
Yeah, I think power is an overriding issue for right now. But you're not just an IP company, you're also an ASIC company. So you're at the IP level and the chip level. So what you're saying is not just IP, right? You're talking about chip level.
Yeah, it's all the way through. Look, it'll be all the pieces that go onto the silicon. It'll be custom silicon chiplets that we're building. It'll be custom optical chiplets that we'll be building, and it'll be the system in package solutions where we'll take some of our customer silicon, some of our own silicon, take all that common IP technology that exists in both, package it up and deliver these full solutions to our customers to drive these next generation applications.
Yeah, you know, when I listened to the bespoke silicon talk, you know, it just made me realize that most of this bespoke silicon or the domain specific silicon is done by ASIC companies. It has been for a while and it will be in the future. So you're in a good position. But Tony, you kind of went about it backwards. You know, usually ASIC companies buy IP companies, right?
Yeah. Maybe some of the most similar analogies to us was, I fully agree, right? Great companies like LSI and Agere, right? They started building silicon and then they built up the IP portfolio. We came out of it as, CMOS design experts. We focused on what we knew best, which was initially IP. But look, over time, we clearly see our job doesn't end there. In order to make our customers successful, we needed to own more. And that has now transitioned over both to the silicon, but also through the package, right? Through all this complex packaging technologies, because as the world moves to chiplets, someone has to help the industry integrate these chiplets and deliver these complex package subsystems. And that's what we're doing. And I am extremely excited about the future of our industry. Now, every time physics has told us we couldn't advance more, our ingenuity has allowed us to make breakthroughs and keep the pace of innovation as high as it ever has been.
Yeah, you know, I've been in the industry for 40 years and I keep hearing that, you know, we can't do this, we can't do that, but we always do it. And now when somebody tells me we can't do something, I don't even listen because I know we can, right?
Exactly. Maybe it's bravado that we've built up over the years, but I agree with you. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah. Well, brilliant acquisition, Tony. And thank you again for spending time with us. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast. And have a great day.
Thanks, Dan.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.